From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. You'll know my next guests, one in particular, Alexis Moore from Survivors in Action, and Maria Phelps are both victims advocates, both victims themselves, and I thought I'd bring them on to talk about a bill in the New York, actually, that is out there to try and extend the statute of limitations for domestic violence civil cases from 1 year to 2 years. I don't believe there should even be a statute of limitations issue there. If you're a victim, you should have the right to sue, and we've covered that on other cases here. But welcome, ladies, and we'll get into the gist of that in a little bit.
Thank you, Dana, for having us.
Thank you. Maria, tell us a little bit about yourself. I believe this is your first time here.
This is my first time here, and thank you for having me on to discuss the bill. I am Maria Phelps. I'm a survivor of domestic violence, brutal domestic violence in New York, and for about a year now, I've been writing on my website, forsurvivors.blogspot.com, about domestic violence issues, my own personal story, and I've also been trying to propose, actively trying to propose new legislation for domestic violence in the state of New York.
On your blog, Maria, there's a form letter, I guess, or a type of a form letter. I'm going to share a little bit of that with my audience. It says it's addressed to Assemblyman Zembrowski. I would like to express my support for Bill A08621, the extension of the statute of limitations for cases involving domestic violence. This two-year extension on the statute will bring hope and opportunity for many victims of domestic violence in that a victim will be able to take civil recourse against his or her abuser in a court of law. The whole statute of limitations issue I've covered on the show many times. Different states handle it different ways, but in my opinion, 1 year's disgusting. 2 years makes it a little bit better, but when it comes to the statute of limitations for a victim, how many times do we have to re-victimize someone when they can't even take civil action, Maria?
Yes, I mean, it's true, Dana. I did what I could with this bill. Unfortunately, you can't ask for too much.
Right.
In family court, a battered woman in family court is only allowed, actually, no, I'm on a different subject right now. I'm talking about restraining orders, sorry. When I was battered by my husband and I decided to leave my situation, I realized that when I went to a lawyer, my lawyer actually told me that I did not have the right, after 1 year had passed since my injury, I was not allowed to actually seek civil recourse. So that got me involved in trying to advocate for at least a two-year extension on this, because something needs to be done. I mean, it's way too short.
Alexis Moore from Survivors in Action, 1 year, 2 years, that's crazy. Some of these cases can be dragged out in criminal court for a year or two. Why punish the victim again by allowing them or not allowing them to sue in these cases? Your thoughts?
Absolutely, Dana. Re-victimization, we've talked about this on your show several times. And, you know, survivors of any crime, it's often not even known what injuries you have. It takes a while for an accurate medical diagnosis to even take place. So asking a victim to file suit within 12 months time period when they may not even know exactly what their injuries are. I mean, I myself have permanent nerve damage and was not diagnosed until May of 2009, and the battery took place in my case in 2004, for example. So you've got to take a look at the reality for victims, and the truth is if there isn't some way for them to seek civil redress against the batterer, we're sending the message, go ahead and commit domestic violence, and it's a free-for-all. I mean, it's ridiculous. We're sending the message to batterers that they will not be punished, and this is not acceptable at all. And I personally just take my hat off to Maria Phelps, her efforts, her work, being so public and brave, speaking out about her injuries, and all of her hard work lobbying for this legislation in New York has definitely been an inspiration to me, and I know to millions of victims out there who feel like, you know what, the system is just built many, many walls that are very difficult for us to overcome, but with folks like her making a difference, at least it helps all of us continue to fight.
And just to remind the listeners, Maria's blog site is http://4, that's actually the number 4, survivors.blogspot.com. Maria, you know, I don't want to harp on the one-year, two-year part, but again, when you see, in the case of Alexis, diagnosis sometimes taking years, it seems like all the rights get thrown back to the alleged accused in court, and the victim has these timetables put on them. I think it's just nuts. Let's get into your case a little bit here, if you don't mind. As a victim, I give all victims credit when they have the strength to come forward, and it always amazes me how they're able to come forward and help others with this cause. How shocked were you in your case when it came to a situation like this, if it did, or in anything as far as the limitations that were put on you, and again, that term that Alexis and I like to use, that re-victimization?
Yeah, Dana. In my case, my abuser actually broke my leg, severely broke my leg. I have today 9 screws and a plate in my left leg. I'm continually seeing doctors about 3 times a week for that problem, as well as neck problems. I've had trauma to my neck, so I'm always seeing doctors. And since day one, I've been paying my own medical treatments, surgeries, rehab, years of rehab on my own. And it's really unfair that battered women have to actually take on this financial burden of paying for their own medical treatments caused by domestic violence. And it's also unfair that the abuser is not held financially responsible for the crime that they have committed. And in my personal opinion, this extension, if passed, it will not benefit me at all at this point, because it will be over 2 years for me. It is over 2 years for me right now. But it will benefit a number of women who do have the courage to get up and walk out and, you know, can actually seek civil recourse and get their money back for surgery, medical treatments.
Alexis Moore and Maria Phelps are here. Alexis, I think that term courage is so important here because a lot of these cases, state by state, and I know I've covered many of them on my program, one of the most high-profile cases I covered here was the Jackie Hollander versus James Brown in Illinois, where the statute of limitations was actually removed in a case like that as far as civil action and in rape cases. But tell us a little bit how each state looks after this. Is this not a federal responsibility, or do we still have to look after the states and then have a jumbled up mess?
You know, Dana, you're hitting the nail on the head. As always, the federal government, that's where we need to head with this sort of legislation. Having every state just doing their own thing, so to speak, when it comes to crime victims, every crime victim should have the same equal protections under the law. And that's something that I can't stress more. And when Marie and I first spoke about the legislation, that was the first thing I said. Domestic violence victims, this is a stepping stone. It'll hopefully get more folks who are in a domestic violence relationship to seek help and know that we're out there fighting in the trenches, hoping that to restore some respect to those victims out there who have fallen through the cracks. But overall, yes, why this isn't for all victims and on the federal level so that every state is uniform, I'll never know. And that's what I'm lobbying for daily with Survivors in Action, is to ensure that every state has equal protection like we do with full faith and credit. We've got to make this happen in all 50 states. I mean, the victims are nationwide, worldwide. They're not just in one city or one county in one state. It's ridiculous to even think that's possible to help everybody.
Yeah, it certainly is unfair, Maria. And when you come to this, the work that you've done, and again, you used the term courage, and it's your courage that has helped here. What kind of support are you getting from the government?
Excuse me, Dana. I didn't catch that last part.
Well, what kind of support are you getting from your government representatives?
Well, you know, it's funny. The support I'm getting is only from my local representatives. Unfortunately, DV organizations have not really helped all that much in my case, so that's why I'm pretty much on to my local representatives for help. And I also have other ideas for legislation that I've voiced to them as well, other than the extension on the statute. So they've been really helpful in hearing what I have to say and trying to make things happen here in New York. But we really do need help in every state because, you know, an extension on the statute of limitations, it should be for all states. And I believe all states are pretty similar in that for personal injury cases and or intentional injury, it's usually 1 to 3 years. I believe that's to be correct.
You know, when it comes to Alexis, these sorts of cases, the politicians can speak, and there are some good ones out there. A lot of them are full of empty rhetoric. I just about said something else. but some of them will, you know, we the people sort of thing. All of a sudden the media will get involved. A cable news show will get involved. The pressure comes from not only the victims' advocates, but everyone else. And we try to put the pressure on a little bit. I'm curious, is your perspective, you know, from Survivors in Action and as a victim yourself, how much does the media mean to something like this?
Oh, the media is huge. And as much as I hate to say it, because a lot of the media, obviously, they just want headlines and they have a tendency to sensationalize things and do so in a manner that's not always pro-victim, which I'm totally opposed to. But yet for many of us, including my lobbying efforts and what have you, I depend upon the media. So you oftentimes have to bare your soul as a victim to get attention, because no one will pay attention in our nation or across the country, around the world for that matter, unless you are vocal and have a voice that is saying to everybody, I need help, and there's nobody out there helping me, and bare your soul, expressing the help on national radio, television, print media. All of these tools are the only way these days, I have to admit, for most victims to survive, because the idea now of remaining invisible and surviving domestic violence or any crime like stalking and some of these things that go on, for the majority of victims, in order to stay alive, they have two choices. They can try to go below the radar and just sail off into the sunset and hope that this hell-bent batterer or the stalker does not find them. But in most of the cases, without media support, the victims fall through the cracks, legislation never gets passed, and it never gets implemented, which is even worse. So the media plays a very vital role, and as much as I hate to admit that, we just have to do what we have to do and encourage victims, if they're brave and courageous and in a position where they can safely report to the media and tell their stories like many are doing recently, that's the best thing they can do in some cases, and Maria happens to be one of those, because obviously she's a brave victim that spoke out and said, hey, enough is enough, and she's got a bill being introduced to the legislature there in New York State, so bravo to Maria and her courage.
Yeah, for sure, and that bill is to try and get the statute of limitations increased from 1 year to 2 years in domestic violence cases. Maria Phelps, how do you stay motivated? There must be downtimes that you wonder, am I doing any good? And that's just human. Is it your own case? Is it the case of others? Do you know that in the future this may help? It's amazing, and again, I commend the both of you as victims to be able to come forward and even discuss this, let alone not just throw up your hands and say, I've had enough.
Yeah, it's interesting. Actually, I've connected with great groups of people, Alexis being one of them, very supportive. It brings me a ton of motivation to keep going. We're a bunch of survivors that we just stay in contact constantly, and we're always talking about new ideas to help all different people, victims of crime, and that really does keep me motivated, and I want to continue to pick apart this problem of domestic violence, and I have a lot of good ideas for legislation in the future. And I just hope that my local representatives will give me a chance and, you know, just hear what I have to say and try to implement these ideas.
And Maria's blog site, again, is the number 4survivors.blogspot.com. And you want to see real life, ladies and gentlemen that are out there listening, go there and take a look, and you'll see what it's like to have 9 screws in your leg. There's a picture of an x-ray there. And if that doesn't hit home, I don't know what will. Alexis, let's get down to the brass tacks here. You're working hard, New York, there's other states, there's all this stuff going on. You have a proactive First Lady in the White House. We have the media covering, you know, for the last few years, it's been nothing but the war on terror and terrorism and all that sort of stuff. And I'm not saying that's not important, but the homeland, I think, is more important here now. We have an epidemic of domestic violence. We have an epidemic of violence, period. We have law enforcement officers who are supposed to be on a higher level committing crimes, and the focus is heavily on them. Kids being killed, you name it. It's just so depressing most days. What can the government do better?
Well, I think the first thing we have to do is start figuring out what we're doing with our money. I mean, here in the VAWA Act, the federal funding that goes to domestic violence organizations and to the various programs out there, it's not trickling down to the victims. If it were, Maria Phelps and the millions like her who reach out for help and fall through the cracks wouldn't exist. So the first thing I have to say is that we need domestic violence reform.
Yep.
And the first thing on my agenda is the reform along with an oversight committee. Somebody who's really going to be the watchdog, the eyes and the ears for the people, the taxpayer, and more importantly than that, the victims, because it is a matter of life and death.
And exactly. When I say epidemic, I usually get criticized for that. But Maria, when you look at it, not just your case is bad enough to see something like this happen, because it shouldn't happen. But there's this attitude or an ideology with most people out there that if it doesn't happen to them, or if it doesn't happen in their family, they're not really concerned. And in some cases, the old-timers are, that's a private thing. We don't want other people to know about it. Let's just keep things quiet. It's education, 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 I believe. And it's something that we do fail on. And I'm curious your thoughts on that.
I'm familiar with if people not being that concerned if it doesn't happen to them. I understand that. I've been through that myself, dealing with people who are not very interested. But actually, my writing has actually sparked a lot of interest in my own towns, communities, counties around my own house. A lot of people know my name. They're reading, they're following, they're writing to their local representatives. And this is a problem that I always say is a community problem, mm-hmm. because it affects 1 in 4 women, I believe, today, and it's killing our mothers, ruining our women. It's happening to so many people of all different backgrounds, and it is a community problem, and it's not going to stop unless we all get involved and unless we all support causes, my kind of cause, where I'm constantly advocating for new legislation, and people are responding to this. They are picking up on it, and they're writing, and they're getting involved, and that's what we need to bring change.
Yeah, Alexis, you know me as I'm a consequences kind of guy. If you do the crime, you do the time. And I think a big failing in society today, especially with domestic violence, is that they're the coward judges out there that are just not doing their job. They're not sentencing the batterers to jail, although the rehabilitation aspect can come up and all that. And that's not what we're here for. Your thoughts on the system, the judges, is that part of the problem because we're just letting it go, the old slap on the wrist routine?
Absolutely. The slap on the wrist isn't going to send the message that we need sent. And the problem is the judges give the slap in the wrist routine, and the batterers walking the streets, and the law enforcement folks who've worked and investigated and been out there in the trenches working real hard,
right.
They start getting frustrated. So it starts impacting the victims, because then law enforcement says, oh, why do I want to respond to these calls when it's going to end up with a slap on the wrist, a couple hours of anger management, or, you know, for some, not even a conviction. And that's the problem. It's a circle. We need our judges to do more. We need the powerful message to be delivered to the batterers. You're not going to get away with it. And that's why I support measures like GPS monitoring of domestic violence batterers and stalkers. law enforcement is our big ally, and I can see why they're frustrated, because when you get to the court system and the judges have lenient sentences, or because of our overcrowded prisons and jails, they're let out in a matter of hours after being taken into custody, we're sending the message, go ahead and do it, and that's not okay. So I do feel for the law enforcement folks who are out there really working hard, for advocates, and most of all for the victims, because they're the ones that are really caught up in all of this, and it's their lives on the line. It's the victims who are suffering the most, and that kills me, and that's why I started Survivors in Action.
Maria Phelps, I'm going to give you the last word and ask you this question. How outraged are you when you see the Drew Petersons on the television, alleged to have committed a crime? We have to keep that word open. But how the media Hollywoodizes him, and I don't even think that's a word, but gives him, and I've had Drew Peterson on my program too, but give him the opportunity to come on and basically make a mockery of being a victim.
Oh, yeah, it's disgusting. I'm a big fan of Nancy Grace, so, you know, I'm always watching these batterers and murderers. It's disgusting, and they're getting away with this, and the law is letting them get away with this, that we need harsher laws, period. That's the only way to start reversing this behavior. They're not getting punished. The abusers are not getting punished. Half of them are not even convicted, and most of them, the women aren't even reporting the crime
right.
out of fear of retaliation. So we need harsher laws in place, definitely.
If you want to learn more about the bill in New York to extend the statute of limitations, go to Maria's blog site, http://4, survivors.blogspot.com. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you, Dana. Thank you.
We'll be in touch. Bye-bye. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with Mark Williams. You know Mark is a news commentator, a regular on the Nancy Grace Show, talk about what's happening with the Casey Anthony case trial. There's a big dump of documents. I don't know why they call it that, but I guess that's what it is. We'll be right back. Okay, it always amazes me, and we've talked about it several times, that in the state of Florida in particular with the Anthony case, that we're seeing so much quote-unquote evidence, and there's a recent document dump is the term that we're using, and you can play that any which way you want about the case. And I thought I'd bring on my buddy Mark Williams. You know Mark is a regular on the Nancy Grace program. He's a news commentator, and he has a new project that he's working on called the Halifax Area News Watch. And just by coincidence, go to halifaxareanewswatch.com to learn more. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Dana, good to be on the show tonight.
No, I was trying to throw a little humor into it when I said dump.
It was a dump. They dumped 1,000 pages. The prosecution dumped 1,000 pages of documents, literally, on Friday in the Casey Anthony case. Missing 35 pages of an autopsy report dealing with little Kaylee Anthony. 35 pages. You've been around a long time. And, you know, an autopsy report is only 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 pages.
Yep.
But they're talking 35 pages in this case. Unbelievable.
Tell us why that group of 35 pages wasn't included.
Well, it was a deal where the Anthony family did not want to be embarrassed, or they didn't want the news media to get a hold of them and all this information be brought to light. However, despite the fact that the 35 pages weren't included in Friday's dump, they will be coming out of trial. There's no doubt about it. They will be coming out of trial.
And, you know, all the speculation aside, the talking head, so to speak, and you and I are just like that. We're too. I better stop. we're talking about it, but boy, the speculation is going to run rampant, because you make a very good point. Autopsy reports aren't normally 35 pages long. What the heck is in that?
You know, it's difficult to say. The medical examiner, Dr. G, she has a television show on one of the cable networks here in this country. She was apparently very thorough when they did the autopsy. And the heck of it is, there wasn't much evidence, or there wasn't much of a remain to do an autopsy on. You had bones, and you had a lot of things around the site. You had some flesh and some hair, and that was about it. And the 30, I can't wait to see the 35 pages. How does that grab you?
Yeah, exactly. Me too.
You know, Dale Earnhardt's autopsy was only, you know, a couple of pages. He was the seven-time NASCAR champion killed at the Speedway back in 2001. But this is more involved than that. And Dr. G wants to dot her I's and cross her T's. She does not want anything coming back to her or her staff.
I hear she's very thorough, Mark. Mark Williams is here. George and Cindy, June 16th, on the cable shows. You know, it's difficult for me. I have all the compassion in the world for the young child that lost her life.
Mm-hmm.
I have all the compassion in the world for the family. But I sit back, and the term self-serving just pops up in front of me when I see them on television at June 16th. All of a sudden they're on CBS. They're talking about wanting to help others. Your thoughts on George and Cindy?
They are on this tour, and I think you and I have discussed this before. They are trying to taint the jury pool in the state of Florida by going on there and on like CBS or Larry King, saying that, well, this is what happened, and boy, we really feel bad. Remember, these are the same folks who couldn't bring themselves to talk to John Morgan in the civil case that Zenaida Gonzalez brought against Cindy Anthony. And these are the folks that they say where they were just under extreme pressure, but for some odd reason, they can still fly to New York City along with their lawyer and appear on all these talk shows, and it just makes my head spin. Last on the 16th, as a matter of fact, Richard Grund, who I met by doing the Gray Show, his son at one time was Casey Anthony's fiance. He conducted a memorial service at Blanchard Park, and a handful of people turned out. And Richard's just a great guy. I mean, I've really got to like him, and he's a minister. He's also an actor. He played in some of the opening episodes of Miami Vice back in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
But he delivered a nice service yesterday, from what I understand.
Well, it's a tragedy, and we sometimes mark tragedy with remembrance. And,
yeah.
And again, the remembrance should be the victim, and there's only one victim here. It's Kaylee Anthony. The family and the whole circus atmosphere around this doesn't seem to slow down. When we talk about the cast of characters, one that we haven't talked about too much is the attorney for George and Cindy Anthony, Conway. What can you tell us about him?
You know, he's a lawyer. He's been doing law for about 20 years. He's in a wheelchair. He's handicapped.
Right.
But he seems to be a good lawyer, and he tries to keep the Anthonys under control, because if you recall early when this case broke, they had Mark Nijame, who's a super attorney out of Orlando, as their attorney, and he would say, "Don't talk," but they continue to talk. The Anthonys did, and so they kept trying to muddy up the water. And finally, Nijame said, "Okay, that's it. Have a nice day." And Conway came on board, and I think he truly has the interests of the Anthonys in mind and in heart.
I do too, and the strategy as far as using the media all the time is an interesting one. And for someone who's been in the media side for as long as you have, when you see cases like this, or Drew Peterson, or whoever, and as much media coverage as there is, did you think that would ever happen? Years ago, you wouldn't see this on Larry King, or you wouldn't see this on other shows.
Well, there's been a change in the media, okay? First off, when I was working in Daytona, I heard the case go down on July 16th, and it was one of those deals, girl missing. You know, and I thought 3-4 days, this thing's going to be over, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Never thinking that I'd be dragged into this on July 24th, and I've made 100-plus appearances on Nancy Grace, on cable news network, on the headline news. And I never thought this case would drag on this long. Also, the news media, and I'm going to go off on a tangent here, with all the cuts that have been done in television and radio stations, and I've been a victim of that, my news department was eliminated. The deal is that it's the easy stories, or it's the predictable stories, like the crashes, the robberies, the Casey Anthony story. I mean, this is an interesting story to follow, somewhat easy, somewhat laid out, and these are what the networks, these are what local news outlets are going with right now.
Mark Williams is here. Last time we spoke, Mark, we talked about a chase, a pursuit, a cast of characters that portray themselves as kid finders. Can we get an update on what's going on there?
The kid finders, not much of an update. George and Cindy Anthony apparently... those kid finders in Osceola County. No charges have been brought whatsoever. The sheriff's office looked into it shortly after we spoke, and what happened is these two women in Osceola County said that Cindy and George Anthony pulled up to the memorial site and took their cross, okay, that they had placed there for little Kaylee. And supposedly a car chase ensued, and it was just a mess. So the two women filed a complaint with the sheriff's department. Sheriff's department checked it out and basically said to all the parties, run about your way. We've got better things to do. There's nothing criminal. There's no criminal activity here. They didn't do anything illegal. If, in fact, they did that, we've got other murders to take care of in the city of Orlando and Orange County.
Yeah, and I agree. Mark Williams is here, and it seems like some of these cast of characters need to go stand in the corner with their heads down here for a little bit. When you hear this and you report this and you come on Nancy Grace to talk about this, it just seems like this story, you never seem to have to run out of things to talk about. There always seems to be a different twist and a turn. How important will that be when it comes to trial time?
You know, the lawyers will have to bring their clients under control. That's what's going to have to happen. I can see this trial being very emotional. I could see he said, she said. I could see a parade of people being... on the witness stand in one form or another. There's like 70 witnesses right now between both sides. And what's interesting is I have, ever since I've been on Grace's show, CNN has always sent me something, like what they're going to talk about or what the latest developments are in the case. And I have so many pieces of paper scattered around the place, around my office. It's unbelievable. I was going to get down and do it a week at a time so I can easily subtract things or put things in if I need to. But that's an impossible thing. I just can't do it. I don't have enough file folders to go around. And in this case, you know, if I have a lot of paperwork, you should see the paperwork in that the defense attorneys and the prosecutors have, Dana.
I imagine it's just incredible. And these document dumps that we keep hearing about, it's funny, the activists haven't come out and told us how many trees we've killed in this case.
Yeah, so true. That's number one. Number two, luckily we're able to download it on our computers, or they send out CDs. And I know when they download it on the computer in New York, CNN Headline News, they have couple of people going over the entire thing and just pulling out excerpts. We don't see the entire thing. I mean, we could if we wanted to, but there's no reason to waste our paper to do that. A lot of it's on computer when it comes right down to it.
You know, regular listeners to my program will recognize your voice, Mark. Others that are tuning in for the first time tonight or later on the podcast will say, hey, that's that guy that's on Nancy Grace, but there's more to Mark Williams. You have other things that you're up to, too.
Yeah, I've had to become the mother of invention, as I stated previously. One of the things that happens in the U.S. recession is that a lot of broadcast companies downsize. I was a victim of downsizing. One day they called me up at the end of March and they said, we're eliminating your news department, your local news department. So since I was the only one, I was out the door. So I took my box walk. Left with a very high standard. I've never said anything bad about the company I worked for. So what I've done is I have invigorated a company I've kind of had on the side called MrNewsProductions.com, audio, visual, PR, internet. And just a couple of weeks ago, I got myself a website thinking that I'm going to do the news, but I'm going to do it on the web. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it better than even what I did it when I was taking care of the website where I worked. And I think I've accomplished that. And that, of course, is HalifaxAreaNewsWatch.com. We do local news. We do motorsports. That's the other thing I'm heavily involved in, is motorsports. Things to do in the Daytona Beach area. My resume's on there, in case anybody wants to look it up. And there's it's continually growing. It's a work in progress, but I'm proud of the fact that I've been able to bring it online, and I've had some pretty good reviews on it, Dana.
Absolutely. It does look great, and we have a link on the show notes. Mark Williams, I'll stay in touch with you, my friend, and you're welcome to the program anytime.
Thank you very much, and hopefully soon we'll have some additional show notes. I'll have a Nancy Grace section, and if anybody wants to see anything that we've done in the past on Nancy Grace, just go to YouTube and put in the search word Mr. News 70, and you'll find everything there.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
You bet, Dana. Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye. That's Mark Williams, and you can see him on Nancy Grace regularly, and pick him up on his webpage and hear him on our show. And he's an old-time news guy, and they're few and far between anymore, but we need to keep them in business. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back here in a few minutes with our favorite ADA out of Los Angeles County. You know her as Robin Sachs, and her weekly segment called Nothing But the Sachs. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with our favorite weekly segment, Nothing But the Sachs, with ADA Robin Sachs out of Los Angeles County. She's an author. She's a victims advocate. She's a radio talk show host herself. And usually when we have her on the air, she's somewhere different. I don't know where we're going to get her tonight. Or maybe she's actually home. Hi, Robin.
Hi, there I am. I'm in front of a computer. I'm not at the dog store. This is, almost like a vacation.
I forgot about the dog store. I never thought, where did you interview that DA? Well, she was in the dog store, and I thought, I don't know if anybody would believe me. You are probably one of the most frequent travelers that I've ever seen. You've got books out right now. You do work. You are on the radio show. You're doing PR stuff. You're how do you stand it? How do you keep up?
Scott, if I start talking, you may start charging me because I think I need a visit to the shrink right now myself. The thing is that in this business, as you know, of crime and advocacy, it's a tireless job, that takes constant work and energy. And when you glom on to people who actually have the ability to make a change and do things, the real people out there and the real people who are really great at what they do will connect you to other great people. And you just can't help but to make the effort to meet those people and get involved with them because in order to make a difference, you've got to make an effort.
A term that comes up on my program all the time is courage, and courage is one thing, but it's easy in this line of work to fish out the phonies real quick. There's those that are out there for their own benefit, and there's those that are out there that are actually wanting to help, and you're one of the ones that are out there wanting to help. But let's talk about the phonies for a minute. We hear about the so-called organizations or frauds that say we're going to help find kids, or we're going to help as a victim's advocacy group or whatever, and the damage that they do to the legitimate ones is, it's not measurable because it's so tragic. Let's talk about the phonies that are out there. I'm sure you've run into them as an ADA and all the work that you do.
I do. I mean, it's really, really distressing because the most vulnerable group of people out there are those who have been victimized by crime. They're people that are in need. They're people who are searching for help. And it's very, very difficult, especially in the age of the Internet. You think the age of the Internet really helps everything, but the age of the Internet also gives a false sense of security, false platforms for people, and can certainly create expectations that won't be able to be met, which can then diverge a whole investigation or, worse yet, a whole healing process. They're out there. I mean, they are out there. And let me tell you, I mean, I hate to admit this, but even as recently, in the last several months, I have been duped by people by people who claim to have information,
yep.
have cases, have ways of solving cases, have, you know, the smoking guns or have those kinds of things. And, you know, and for me, what ends up happening to me a lot is people want to use my position and use my platform to advance their own platform.
Yep.
Which is really hard to do that due diligence and to get to the bottom of who people are. And so one of the things that you want to do is really spend time and energy doing your due diligence on people and question why certain people are so interested in helping and seeing what they actually produce in terms of what their help is.
You know, that's so true. Robin Sachs is here with our weekly Nothing But the Sachs segment. It's the leeches that are out there, the frauds that are out there that one has to be so careful of. And I've interviewed the victims on this program, Robin, that have said to me, I didn't have anywhere to go, and I was afraid to talk to this person or talk to that person because I couldn't trust them, and trust is the big thing. Let's talk about trust when it comes to victim advocacy.
Well, I mean, first of all, I think that, you know, whenever a victim receives a phone call or an email unsolicited by someone claiming that they can be their spokesperson or be there to help them navigate the media or help them take on a role, and they are saying, you know, people who are willing to offer to do that, who may not be charging necessarily, but want to do things like wrap up their rights or have them sign book deals in advance or sign media rights in advance. Those are people that people should be worried about. People who are not in the business of law enforcement and investigation, who have a background in advocacy or psychology or social services, are people that should be watched out for. People who don't have the correct credentials and people who are not willing to openly put in writing what their intentions are. And these are the people I talk about who are cashing in on crime. A lot of people say that the media spends time and energy using scare tactics as a way of, and hype and all that other stuff. But worse than that, I mean, at least if hype is being used and scare tactics are being used to scare people into doing the right thing and protecting themselves, that's one thing. But using the crimes that have already occurred to re-victimize and you know, forgive the expression, to rape the victims of money or rights or you know, advantages or what have you is despicable and should be punished.
Yeah, absolutely. Robin Sachs is here. Mark Williams was just on the program. You know, Mark is a regular on Nancy Grace, as you are. And he and I were talking about the most recent document dump of evidence in the Anthony case. But all of a sudden, we're missing 35 pages of an autopsy. You've seen autopsy reports. I've seen autopsy reports. They're not usually 35 pages long. So that's one thing that's got us in the media, or we in the media, interested. But I'm curious your thoughts on that, both from a ADA perspective and from a media perspective, because you do both.
Well, exactly. I mean, first of all, I think that, you know, I'm always very suspect of, you know, all of the media dump, as you so aptly put it just now, that, you know, the paper dump that comes from Orlando right now, because what's happening there is something that's very unique to the state of Florida that does not happen in many states, and that is being the release of the discovery through the court system to the public as protocol. It's not illegal what they're doing. It's not unethical. As a matter of fact, it's their law. And it's wonderful that we have that access. But what it does is pages missing or documents included or things blacked out or documents not included or videos leaked or whatever it may be, all of a sudden has all of us talking not just about the existence of evidence, but now we're talking about the non-existence of evidence as well, which, you know, to be honest with you, to get us talking about it then ends up only having the potential of being a place and a space for Jose Baez and Andrea Lyons to go in and use that for a place for reasonable doubt. All of a sudden you've got 35 pages missing, and uh-oh, now we're putting reasonable doubt out there when we don't even know anything really about what those pages are. For all we know, they could be purposeful blank pages. You know, there could be a packet having to do with that are irrelevant, that just were not included because they were completely irrelevant. Maybe there was an instruction manual that was 35 pages long that's included in there for all we know. So I just think that it's really dangerous to start speculating on what those documents would be or could be. But from a prosecutor point of view, an additional 35-page autopsy report is very curious to me. The only thing that I can say is, again, I don't know what forms they use. I don't know what narrative portions they have. For all I know, the initial crime report could be part of the autopsy, which would then explain why it could be that long.
Absolutely. Robin Sachs
so
is here.
I'm not going to make any judgments right now.
Robin Sachs is here with our weekly Nothing But the Sachs segment. The judge in the Drew Peterson case has made Drew go stand in the corner and put his head down and not get a hold of the media anymore. Your thoughts on the Peterson gagging?
Thank goodness. I mean, for crying out loud, Peterson, every opportunity he can. Yeah. I actually was just in a courtroom today where I watched someone who was probably equally as narcissistic as Drew Peterson. And this was someone who has a criminal lawyer, and I'm sorry to digress a little bit, who has a criminal lawyer and decided to take it upon himself to represent himself at a restraining order hearing. And I think he purposely did that just to have the ability and excitement of being able to cross-examine the victims and the victim's mother and be able to have that kind of perverted sense of enjoyment there. And the only way to stop that secondary or tertiary excitement for Drew Peterson is to do the same thing as, you know, staple his mouth and put some masking tape on top of the staples.
And I think that's true. You know, enough's enough in this case. And when it became a whimsical farce and a slap in the face of victims and basically a re-victimization of this case, enough is enough. I believe in giving the opportunity for someone to come on and speak. But when it became a comedy act, then it certainly became too much. Robin Sachs is here.
I have to say one thing, and I'm sorry before you cut me off. I do have to say, from a prosecutor point of view, I kind of say let him roll, because the more he says, the more despicable he is, and the more we're able to see what he is. So I'm talking from an advocate's point of view to shut him up. But from a prosecutor, keep talking, Drew.
Did I cut you off? No, you've hurt my feelings.
Oh, you would never cut me off. I was interrupting. Justice interrupting.
You see, I was just going to say, that's that radio show that's maybe gone to literally... No, anyway, I won't say it. My first segment tonight was we were talking about a bill in New York that will allow the statute of limitations in domestic violence civil cases to be increased from 1 year to two. In other words, giving an opportunity for the victim to sue. But even 2 years seems to be a bit of a farce, because you and I both know that trials can go on for a year or more. Sometimes medical diagnoses don't come forward for 3 or 4 years. And it's the consistency of inconsistency, if that makes sense, of the states across the union. Why isn't the federal government stepping in here and starting to protect the people a little bit? Because I think a 2-year statute of limitations, it's better than one, is still stupid.
Well, you know, statute of limitations, first of all, we want to make sure that you, that the listeners are aware that we're talking about the statute of limitations from a civil point of view.
Yes.
And I have to say, I hear what you're saying. I don't necessarily agree with what you're saying, because I think that the amount of lawsuits that are really filed as a result of civil lawsuits from domestic violence are so few and far between. I think that there is a lot of desire for people to file civil lawsuits if there is that avenue, but the fact of the matter is, and I was having this conversation, another conversation I had today, is that you very rarely see sexual assault victims or domestic violence victims pursuing lawsuits, and not because they wouldn't win and not because they're not justified. The fact of the matter is, lawyers don't take those cases on very often because there are no deep pockets at the end of the day to really get anything from. So, you know, when a sexual assault occurs at a school or at a church or at a hospital or something of the like, then there's a deep pocket to go after, and you hear about those cases. In a domestic violence case, if you have just the other person to go after, you can get that same money in a family lawsuit and other different avenues. So, yes, from a philosophical point of view, it's bothersome that there's not a longer statute of limitation, but from a practical point of view, I don't really think that it's really going to affect any cases, because I think the message is, okay, we're going to allow for that little bit of extra time to see if we get an increase in those kinds of cases.
Robin Sachs is here. We've got about 30 seconds. How is Justice Interrupted going? What's on the platform? Or what did you do? I guess your show was on last night. What was your show about?
Again, I was, as you know, I was actually last night. It was really fascinating. The best part about last night, it was I was on Virgin American Airlines. I'm like, huge. I'm going to do advertisements for them. I'm the new national spokesperson, and they don't even know it, because I was on my computer the whole time and able to watch the chats and watch what was going on, but obviously couldn't participate on the phone. So I wasn't involved in last night, but I really want to talk about next week. We have a fantastic, exciting superstar guest next week, and that is Jane Velez Mitchell is going to be joining us, and we're super excited about having her come on and join us next week.
Wow, that sounds great. Robin, see you next week.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Robin Sachs with this Nothing But the Sachs segment that we have each week, and it's always great to have Robin here. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with the founder and president of Texas EquiSearch, Tim Miller. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. It's been a little while since we've had Tim Miller on. You'll know Tim Miller is the founder and president of Texas EquiSearch. He's back in Florida looking for Tracy Ocasio. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Hi, Tim.
You are, Dana. You are.
Tell us a little bit about this case.
Oh, this case is getting complicated. This case looked like it was coming into it, maybe going to be one of them easier cases. We knew we only had like a 3-hour window. We know where she was last seen at the tap room, which is a little club. They was watching the NBA playoffs, and then we knew where her car was found, and know where the pings went off of her phone. And so in the beginning, it looked like we just had about an 8-mile area that would have needed to be searched. And then every day some new information started coming in, and they're finding out more and more stuff about this the suspect.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, another girl came forward that she actually took him for a ride home from the bar, which looks like it's his motives. And he tried to rape her. She somehow or another got away but was in hospital for a long time. Then another girl came forward that same circumstances, and he broke her arm, but she was so afraid of him that she said that she fell, and then she came forward. And we've been in working with the Coe Police Department on this.
Mm-hmm.
And then today we met with the Apopka Police Department. And it just so happens that back on February 11th, this former friend of a suspect, his name's Chris George, disappeared. And the suspect and one of his friends was out there around the car. They said that Chris got in a wreck, took off running out through the woods, and nobody's seen him since. And,
wow.
And Chris had somewhat of a drug problem from what we understand, and so law enforcement didn't take it just extremely serious at that time. But after Tracy was reported missing and last seen with James Hackaby, then, you know, they started putting two and two together. So we're broadening that search a great deal. I mean, these things aren't always what they look like when you come into it. Now, it's... it's taken a whole new twist, and to the fact that after, you know, meeting with law enforcement today, we feel as though we're probably looking for two victims out there, and they even mentioned possibly more. So,
wow.
Again, this thing isn't as simple as it looked like when we came into it, and every day there's new information surfacing, and it looks like we've got a very dangerous suspect. It's got quite a colorful history, and we're wanting to do everything that we can do to find Tracy or to find Chris and see if we can help determine what his future is going to be so he never hurts anybody again.
Tim Miller's here from Texas EquiSearch. You and I have talked about this before with these sorts of cases. Your group and you have to expect the unexpected, and it looks like in this case it's spiraled into something a lot bigger. How do you keep on top of it? It's day by day, hour by hour, I guess?
Well, it's, you know, two or three times a day we're getting updates from law enforcement. They've actually given us several areas of concern that they once searched. We got several areas today, and that was with Ocoee Police Department. Now we got several areas that Apopka wants us to search, and the Apopka Police Department is actually bringing their command center out tomorrow and bringing a tent out and stuff, so we're going to be set up on a Ocoee Apopka road, and actually going to now be searching everything in Ocoee and everything in Apopka, trying to, you know, see if somehow or another we can get to that right spot and you know, return one or both of these home to their family. But, you know, this, again, this thing's turned out to just be a lot larger area than anything we anticipated when we first got involved. So, I mean, law enforcement's been doing a wonderful job on the investigation, and both law enforcement agencies ask us to, you know, please stay. Let's continue the search, and they really want these two victims found.
You know, when I know you concentrate 195% on finding the victim, but it's after the Anthony situation, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. The media all of a sudden becomes interesting, I think, is the term I'll use for you, Tim. How's the media been in this case?
The media has been okay in this case, but after the Anthony search, and I've had to take a whole different look at how the media reports things.
I don't blame you.
And, you know, I had an argument with one of the, you know, major media stations, and I've not been on that show since, that, you know, I'm not going to be involved in turning any of these missing person cases into entertainment and sensationalizing it. You know, we're going to report what we're doing. We're going to report the facts as they are. And I've just been real, real gun-shy of doing any media, if you really want to know the truth.
Yep.
And so, you know, I've set down some ground rules, but that doesn't mean they're always going to work neither, because, you know, we all know how they edit things and take stuff out of context and stuff, so we're just being, you know, we're being real leery of what we report to them and what we don't report to them, and it's a, you know, it's a shame, I guess, that, you know, all the networks are very, very competitive now, and it's all about ratings, and unfortunately, they're using our missing loved ones for the ratings, and I just don't feel as though that's fair to the families or the missing persons.
Absolutely, and that's what's most important, is the family and the missing person. While I've got you here, one last question, Tim, if you don't mind, about the Holloway case. You and I have talked about it many, many times. We're always interested. I'm always asked, next time you have Tim Miller on, ask him about Natalie Holloway. So I'm asking.
You know what? We're having a big fundraiser in July, and Beth is actually coming to our fundraiser. We've done so very, very much work in Aruba, and I was actually with John Savetti that did the water search over there, and then Louis Schaefer, who actually funded that thing last time. I was with them just a couple weeks ago. And the Natalie Holloway case is one of them that, you know, we still have 140-plus targets over there that we located with sonar equipment. It's one of those things that we do want to get over there and investigate every one of them with the ROV, send it down. And some of that stuff's in 1,100 feet of water.
Yeah.
And, again, it's going to be an extremely expensive search, and, you know, upwards of $1.5 million. And there was one, again, there was one irresponsible reporter out of Birmingham, Alabama, that reported that we'd already had that $1.5 million secured. And it's one of the things that just killed our donations.
Yeah.
I mean, just killed them. And we got emails and phone calls that people that had donated to us said, how in the world can you spend $1.5 million on Natalie Holloway case when we have all the missing person cases over here. And it was not like that. We don't have 10 cents secured for Natalie Holloway case to go back to Ruby yet. And that's one of the things that that Louis Schaefer is working on. So it's I know for a fact we will be back there someday. I don't think Fred Goebel helped our relationship out over there in Aruba when he took his dog over there. But I think that, you know, we can mend all that stuff and move forward. But I am certainly looking forward to the day when we get back over to Aruba. Continue that search, investigate every one of them objects that we've got out there in the sea, and see if we can pull off that miracle and get Natalie located. So Natalie is of course not priority right now, and it's because of funding and because of other cases we got. But I'm not going to say that she's totally on the back burner neither. So, you know, it's going to take another one of the miracles for Louis Schaefer to go ahead and generate the money. And I know if anybody can do it, it will be Louis Schaefer. And, you know, when God blesses us with that, then we'll go over there and put every effort into seeing if by chance one of them objects is Natalie. And we feel as though one of them are.
Yeah, and bring Natalie home.
We just got to get the right one.
Absolutely. Tim Miller, thank you, sir.
All right. It's my pleasure again, Dana. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch. And when I say the term class act, that's Tim Miller all the way. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with Steph Watts. Who's Steph Watts? Well, have you ever watched Nancy Grace, Greta Van Susteren on the record, Good Morning America? Well, he's worked on all of those shows as a producer, and he's going to come on in a few minutes and talk about what that was like. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. We're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. His resume starts out with a stint as a forest ranger and other things. He's from Canada, so he's a good guy. I don't know if he says A much. Maybe he's been down in the States long enough to get that out of his system. But he's also been a producer on Nancy Grace, Greta Van Susteren, Good Morning America. He's working independently as a news producer, crime guy, and you all know Steph Watts. And welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate being here.
You know, and I wasn't kidding. You were actually worked as a forest ranger for a while,
did
you?
I did. When I started out, I did it for about 4 years. That was my original mission in life, was to save the forest, be a forest ranger. But somewhere that journey went awry. So,
what was tougher, was sitting down having a meeting with Greta or working in the forest?
I know it. As much as I love her, I'd say having a meeting with Greta.
Listen, you have been involved in crime reporting, and it's regardless if it's cable television, whatever it is, on the scene guy. You're out in the field. You're on the beat, as the cops like to say. The difference, Steph, between those that sit behind the desk and talk in the microphone like I'm doing to the guy that's actually out in the field getting down, getting dirty?
Well, I think the difference is, you know, we all talk about these cases. We see them on TV. And I think it's a very different experience when you deal face-to-face with the family members, the victims, you know, who are really seeking answers. You know, it's tough. You know, this is the kind of work that you take home with you. You know, you don't just shut the door or shut down at 5 o'clock. And, you know, that's a hard question to answer. Because I think, you know, the work that you guys do is as important as the work that the people out in the field do. I mean, everyone's sort of in this together. But I think it's just there's a personalization of being face-to-face with people, you know. And I think something that's different, like if you look at Drew Peterson case or Casey Anthony case, whatever, you know, your personal feeling is on it, you're forced to, you know, set your personal feelings aside, and you have to deal with those people. Like, I mean, I've been in Drew Peterson's house many, many times, and, you know, personally, the guy creeps me out. Mm-hmm. You know, my personal opinion is he's guilty of murdering two women. He hasn't gone to trial yet. That's up to a jury. But you still have to be fair to those people. give them their point of view, you know, at times be nice to them, and sometimes that's hard, you know, it's tough.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope I answered the question.
I've had Drew Peterson on my program several times, and the male is about 70-30. Like, how dare you bring that creep on and give him airtime to? It was nice to hear what he had to say and make us all know that there's those sorts of people that are out there right now. And one of the big cases you worked on, and we've talked about it here. In fact, I just had Tim Miller on, a friend of yours, talking about Natalie Holloway. Not only have you reported and worked on that case, but you've been in a room with Joran van der Sloot. And most people can't say that. Most people would say, how did you stand it?
Well, that was particularly interesting because when I was working for Fox, went to Thailand where he was, and I believe still is, hiding out, and spent 2 weeks back-to-back with him. And that was tough because, you know, my job was to, you know, get as much information out of him, have him contradict himself, get him on camera with yet another story as to what happened to Natalie Holloway. So... and, you know, and that compounds the situation because, you know, you're dealing in a foreign country and you have to be really careful about certain things. You know, you have to be particularly careful about your safety. And the thing that concerned me the most, and actually no one ever, I've never talked about this publicly before, is he was, when I was with him in Thailand, he was smoking marijuana
mm-hmm.
in the hotel room that where we were staying. And I was really concerned about that because, you know, that's a jailable offense in Thailand. I mean, if anybody had caught him, I mean, I was in the room, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there was, you know, and you're in one of those situations where to be comfortable, you let people do what they need to do around you to be comfortable. My personal belief is that he was involved in some sort of drug trading or drug buying and selling over there, and that's why he was sort of reaching out to the media to try to sell a story or do whatever he was trying to do, because I think he had some deep issues in Thailand. And honestly, if he continues to stay there, I think he's going to end up dead.
You know, when you talk about that, whether it's Peterson, whether it's Casey Anthony, whether it's Joran van der Sloot, and you make that judgment call as a producer, as a show host, as a field reporter, whatever, to do that, knowing very well that you're giving a forum for them to spew their nonsense in some cases, how difficult is that? And where do you draw the line?
The thing that I always remember is, if you go back to the Scott Peterson case, is the interview. Scott Peterson did two interviews. One was with Diane Sawyer from ABC News, and the second interview was with Gloria Gomez, who was a local reporter. Those, part of my language, came back to bite him in the ass because they aired those in court during the Peterson case, if you remember. So I think that by allowing these guys to talk, you can only hope that they can contradict themselves, because any of those interviews that you do or that I do, you know, they can you know, subpoena those interviews and they can be used, you know, at trial against Peterson. I think in Drew's case, Drew Peterson's case, you're going to see a lot of that.
It's interesting.
Go ahead.
It's interesting with these cases. I'm sorry if I cut you off. When you look at the parallel between Drew Peterson and what's released to the media, and then you look at the Anthony case, another one that you covered, and Florida and their document dumps, for lack of a better term, we hear more about that case than I guess it would be a producer's dream to cover a case like that, because there's always something where other states and other jurisdictions, you got to dig for it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, even this week, there was another 1,000 pages of discovery released in the Anthony case. And, you know, Nancy Grace, you know, who I still to this day consider to be a good friend of mine, I mean, she's made a cottage industry out of just that particular case. I mean, night after night, there's been enough material for her to continue to do an hourly show. There's been so many twists and turns in that case. I mean, that's going to be an interesting case when it comes to trial. There's just so much information. And we don't even know what they don't have.
Yeah,
you know, because they've obviously put the death penalty back on the table. So there's obviously some stuff, you know, which you always get when these cases go to trial. You know, something comes out in court, you're like, oh, how did I miss that? Jeez, why didn't I get that, you know, before? So I think we may see that in both cases, in Peterson and in the Casey Anthony case.
It is interesting, and if you're just tuning in, Steph Watts is here. You'll know Steph as a producer from shows like Nancy Grace, Greta Van Susteren on the record, Good Morning America. He's out doing some things now we'll get into in a little bit. But I want to continue on with what I consider the public's appetite for shows, for these stories like this. If you go back, I guess maybe O.J. started it, maybe even before that, where you saw the reporting is one thing, but now when you look at the high-profile case shows like Grace and Greta, and even somewhat we do here, I've been doing this type of programming for 11 years now, and the people want to keep hearing it. They want to. They have this appetite. Not sure if it's voyeuristic or if it's just that they actually care. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Well, I don't think the public's appetite for crime or the public's appetite for, like, sort of the public, I call it the public hanging, is anything new. You know, you think back to the old, you know, the remake of the movie Chicago, the Roxy Hart, you know, back in, you know, or the Salem witch hunts, you know. I don't think it's anything new. And I think right now, I actually think there's a little bit of a shift away from crime and justice on TV. If you watch Greta's show, for example, I love Greta. I think she's terrific. She's a really, really smart person to work with and a great person to work with. But she shifted a little bit away from crime and justice into the economy,
politics,
and, you know, war, politics. But I think there's been a shift into shows like yours, great shows. And I can make a couple of announcements about some stuff coming up.
Sure.
But I think a lot of that shift has gone online, but that doesn't change people's appetite for that. But I think what people need to be careful, what's happening is, and you probably know this as much as I do, it's really difficult in going through information when you're not on the ground to figuring out what is fact and what is fiction in these cases. There's so many bloggers. There's so many websites. There's so many armchair detectives out there that we need to be careful because, you know, you say something, you do something, you put it out there on the Internet, and it's out there. And whether or not it's true, it's you know, we fuel this sort of rumor mill. And, you know, we have to remember people are innocent until proven guilty in this country, and we do forget that. And, you know, again, in the Anthony case and in the Peterson case, you know, we don't know all the facts.
Right.
So, you know, we just have to there is an appetite, and you know, I'm probably getting off the mark here, but it's there's just so many cases. So, and you probably talked to Tim about this. I'm sorry, I didn't get a chance to listen to what Tim had to say. I just got to the phone. You know, there's so many missing people cases. There's so many unsolved cases, but we have a tendency to focus on one, and it's just such a small, you know what I mean, percentage of what's really going on in this country.
Steph Watts is here, and you make a good point about the blogosphere. The group that I work with, and I was doing programming long before this blog started. In fact, there wasn't even hardly any internet when I was started to do the show, or the type of streaming that we do now, I should clarify. But you get a group of several hundred, several thousand, sometimes tens of thousands of people who are generally interested. But then there's that perceived dark side out there, and I think you make a good point that we'll put anything and everything up on the net, and it's so important for people like you who may use that information or try to work with that information to put it on air to clarify and to make sure what you're using is actually legitimate. And I'm curious from your point of view how the internet, how what I consider Main Street media as opposed to mainstream media, how they help or hinder people like you?
Well, that's actually, you know what, that's actually a really good question, and I'll tell you, it's kind of twofold. I know for a fact, and I'll give you an example, and I'll just use Greta's example, because, you know, she's so busy and working on so many things. For example, I'll be in the field, and Greta will be like, I just heard this, I just read this, I just saw this. I spent... You know, bless her heart, because Greta and Nancy and, you know, most of the hosts in these shows are really good researchers. They're attorneys. They're always on top of the information. But they get all this stuff and see all these things. I spend three-quarters of my day sort of, like, you know, sorting out fact from fiction.
Right.
But when you're on the ground and you have direct contact with the attorneys, the family, law enforcement, it's easy to say, you know, with confidence, Greta, I understand you read that. And I'm just using Greta as an example. I'm not, you know, saying anything negative about Greta. Greta, I know you read that, but that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on the ground, and this is the way. And then Greta, she's like, thank you for clearing that up. I appreciate that. Because she's got a blog, and would, you know, people would email that. So you do spend a lot of time. You know, it's like I always put up blogs, and, you know, I've got to be really careful here because I think everyone online has always been really favorable and very fair to me, and I really appreciate that. The things that have been said about me, I really appreciate everything everyone said because it has been favorable. But it's like a game of telephone that the kids used to play. I tell you, and you tell someone else. And by the time it gets, you know, to the end kid in that game of telephone, the message has changed. The story has changed. So I just ask that people that are active just be careful about what information they're passing along.
Yeah, how important.
Smart about it. You know, use your if you want to be that armchair, and I use the term armchair detective. Don't just take what people say for face value, because that's not what you do and that's not what I do, you know. And we do, like I said, I'll go back to the beginning. We spend a lot of time putting out rumors, and when you're on the ground and you're on a hot story like Anthony, and everyone's competing to get that story with CNN, Fox, ABC, NBC, get the booking. You know, people are so quick to get to air with whatever they can get to air with. You know, you got to be careful. It's not just the bloggers or the online people, the networks. We're all responsible, you know, for making sure that it's not about just getting the story, it's about getting the story right.
You know,
the work, just to finish up, the work with what you do and what I do, if we go on air with something that's not accurate, it's detrimental to the case.
It's damaging, and it's hard to get
very
back.
Very damaging to justice.
Yep. It's hard to get back from it because we're a part of that right now. Steph Watts is here, and I want to get into what you're doing here in just a second or two. But
sure.
I think it's important, and we touched a little bit on Joran van der Sloot. But for all the stories that you covered, I've shared this story many times. There's been one person that I've talked to over the years that I decided not to put on air, and literally this guy absolutely creeped me out, and that was John Mark Carr. When I talked to him, when I hung up the phone, I had to go and take a shower after that. Like, what an absolute freak this guy is. And he knows I think of him that way. I'm curious, how do you, Steph, as a producer, spend time with a high Joran van der Sloot in a hotel room or talk to a John Mark Carr, because I know Greta did an interview with him, or others? How do you turn off the human side and keep the reporter side going?
I think what... I'll use Joran van der Sloot as an example. What drove me is sitting in meetings with Beth Twitty.
Right.
And seeing her face and being in Aruba and working on this case. And, you know, Danny, you just think, if there's one thing I can do, if I can get one piece of information out of him, if he can slip up.
To help.
He's in Thailand. He's tired. He's, you know... had a couple of drinks. He's visibly smoking marijuana in the hotel room in front of me. If there's something I can get from him that could be different than what he said in the past, which was the case, which I think Greta did a great job because Greta came over and joined me in Thailand, that kind of drives you. But it's interesting. You do have that, and I think you simplified it, that kind of like, I need to take a shower feel. It's exhausting.
Yeah,
so it really is. It's like, you know, to spend time with people that you don't like. Personally, for me, it's a very difficult thing to do because I surround myself in my personal life only with people that I trust and that I like. So that those people know that for me to get that far outside my comfort zone is a very difficult thing to do. But as you know, it's an important part of what we do, and you have to be personable, and those people have to trust you. And in that moment of trust, maybe you're going to get something out of them that nobody else did.
Yeah, it's all about articulation and how you speak, and they can trust you or they don't trust you. If they don't trust you, they're not even going to talk to you, first of all, or they're going to lead you down the garden
path.
Steph Watts is here. Tell us, what are you doing these days?
Oh, things have been good. I've been really, really busy. I've been blessed to be able to start working with CBS News, and in particular the early show, and CBS... is in the midst of launching an incredible website called Crimesiders. It's going to be in conjunction with 48 Hours, and I just want to go on the record that I'm currently not involved with that project, I'm hoping to be. And they're basically setting up a website that's going to be sort of one-stop shopping for crime. It's very different than sort of what you're doing. It's very sort of like smoking gun / TMZ, but just specifically for crime. I've been able to see some behind-the-scenes stuff on that project. Most recently, I worked on the case outside of Philadelphia. Bonnie, the woman that allegedly was abducted by two black men in a car, turned out that she had taken her child to Orlando, Florida. I just finished up work on that. And I'm currently in Vegas. I'm actually not working here. I'm strictly on vacation. Had the opportunity to do radio shows like yours, and I'm just continuing to work on the Anthony case, continuing to work on the Peterson case. And the position I'm in now, that I'm not tied to a network, is I'm able to, you know, kind of make my own choices, come on shows like yours, which I wasn't able to do before, and I always wanted to do, so I really do appreciate the opportunity to be here. So I continue to be on top of and at all big breaking news cases. Plan to be in court for Peterson, plan to be in court for the Anthony case, gavel to gavel, still keep in touch with Cindy and George, you know, Peterson's people, Peterson's attorneys, the state attorney's office, and, you know, monitor the news as you do and wait for the next unfortunate situation to unfold to make sure that we're on top of it and have pressure on the police and keep, you know, keep the stories out there.
Yeah, that's it.
Just because I said there has been a shift away. I think there's been a little bit of a shift away from crime and justice, and I think you, what you do and what I do, you know, we do help get the information out there.
Getting the story out there, I think, is what's most important. Thank you for coming on, Steph. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate being here. Keep up the good work. Love your website. It's a great tool for people and a great way for people to interact with you and chat and discuss. And all I ask is that people, please, just keep the conversations accurate. Don't speculate. Don't put false stuff out there. It doesn't help what you're doing. It doesn't help what I'm doing. It doesn't help the police doing. But keep the conversations going.
Let's stay in touch, my friend.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Steph Watts, producer. Worked on shows like Nancy Grace, Greta Van Susteren, Good Morning America. He's freelancing now, doing some work with CBS, etc., but he's got a nose for the news, literally out there working the beat. That is tonight's show. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. I hope you check out our website at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can pick up past shows. You can listen to the show live, daily commentaries, leave comments, whatever. And for all your news and views and blog information, make sure and check out scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again real soon. Good night.
You've been listening to The Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.